Thank you to the sponsor of today's podcast, Call of Dragons. Call of Dragons is an original, immersive, and epic fantasy world. Taking place in the world known as Tamaris, team up with the elves, orcs, celestials, goblins, and countless other magical creatures to build your vast army. Dive into your own fantasy city with unique decor for each faction. Arrange your city as you see fit, and build the unique fantasy metropolis of your dreams. Once you leave the safety of your own city, prepare for battle alongside your scary but friendly behemoth. Command your behemoth to aid you in battle with a variety of epic behemoths are scattered across Tamaris. Powerful giant bears, venomous hydras, lightning-fast thunder rocks, and terrifying flame dragons. Work together with your alliance to defeat them and bring them under your command, then unleash them in battle. And please don't forget to name them. Train up your heroes with unique skills that can turn the tide of battle in an instant. Unleash powerful abilities to wipe out your opponents with a huge array of equipable magical artifacts, each with their own unique skills. Turn invisible, move at astounding speed, teleport or heal your units in an instant. Equip your heroes with an artifact that suits their abilities and unleash artifact skills to dominate the battlefield. Call of Dragons has true 3D terrain that shapes the gameplay. Tamaris is a land of mountains, rivers, valleys, tundra, and countless other features. Not only is it beautiful, it's also essential to use your terrain to your advantage. Build your city on a plateau to make yourself impervious to attack. Set up an ambush in a mountain valley to wipe out enemy forces, or occupy the high ground and cut all would-be invaders down to size. And that's just scratching the surface. In Call of Dragons, combat isn't just a matter of numbers. With the right strategy, you can turn any situation to your advantage. All these features come together to create an incredible fantasy battle experience that allows you to wage war your way. So, if you're ready to jump into the fantasy world of Tamaris, download Call of Dragons today on PC or mobile by using my link in the description.
This season, a new hot deal has arrived at Metro. $25 a line for 4 lines with all the data you need and 4 free Samsung Galaxy A15 5G phones. Getting Metro's best deals is easy. No ID required, no activation fees. Get a new number or keep your own. It's up to you. That's 4 lines for $25 a line plus 4 free phones. Visit a store or go online today. Only at Metro by T-Mobile.
When you join Metro Plus Tax, for a limited time and subject to change. Max one offer per account.
Last Unicorn is indeed a good book. This is my third time reading it, and it just has these little moments that hit me, like I think like Bible like verses yeah. hit some people.
Yeah, yeah. It's got a lot going on in there. There's a lot there's a lot click clacking around in that thing.
And it's all just everyone's afraid to die.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's
is that what it's about?
Yeah.
I've never read it.
Yep, it's all just memento the fuck out of that Mori, dude.
Mm-hmm.
Huh. I mean, it's about the last unicorn.
Yeah, it's about an ever-living being. I don't know, should I spoil it? I don't think I should spoil it for Chad. Should I?
Yeah, I mean, it's a fairy tale. It's about it's about a unicorn who hears that she's the last unicorn on Earth and goes out to investigate whether or not that's true.
Mm-hmm.
Did you revisit this book, Kevin, because of our last episode where we became unicorns?
It wasn't because of our last unicorn books, although those made me curious about unicorn fiction beyond just Peter S. Beagle.
Mm.
Yeah.
And I think I'm holding unicorns in a place in my heart similar to where dwarves are.
Oh.
Wow. That's pretty deep.
Are you clearing a chamber out?
Yeah. I think I'm capable of liking several things.
Do you think a dwarf would ride a unicorn?
No.
They'd hang out with them, though.
Yeah.
They would certainly stand next to them.
Riding a unicorn seems a little sacrilegious.
Yeah.
Unless you're like a young girl.
But see, that's the thing. Why do gender norm women get unicorns?
Well, dwarves don't really ride anything.
No, I guess that's true. Yeah, you think they would have come around to something.
It's funny how in like Warcraft and in the Hobbit movies, like the massive goat is shown to be the steed of choice.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
For dwarves.
They have to give them something, but I feel like canonically they're natural born sprinters, so they just kind of run, I feel like.
But yeah. Sometimes you don't want to run. Sometimes you want to like take it easy.
I think in that case a dwarf may commandeer some sort of vehicle.
Sure. Okay.
Yeah. I feel like they dig. Like,
yeah, yeah. You just dig through, dig all the way, like straight line it.
Yeah.
Or like, or minecart.
Done some redstone. Yeah.
I've been thinking about. It's funny you bring up like a new love affair, a new chamber of the heart being open to unicorns. There's a fantastical creature that I also love, which I think, guys, maybe having a moment, and I didn't realize it. I have always loved brownies. The tiny creatures that live in your kitchen.
Yeah.
And
do you mean the little people?
Yeah, they're like little tiny elves, kind of.
Yeah.
Or maybe gnomes. I don't know. Something along those lines.
They're like kind of furry too, right? In some depictions.
Yeah, they got kind of a wide berth. I think probably they're one of their most famous representations would be in the movie Willow.
Ah, okay.
When they're the little guys that make fun of Mad Mardigan and call him a daikini. those are some delightful brownies. And I've always thought they were really funny little guys. And I've been wanting to do what you're doing, Kevin, which is find them in literature and find books about them. I doubt there are books about brownies. We can see. But the Cleveland MFing Browns just unveiled their new mascot. And guess what he is? His name is Brownie the Elf. And he is a brownie. 100%.
He's an elf?
He's not an elf. He's an elf because I think they couldn't call him a brownie because people would be like, what the fuck's a brownie? He is 100% a brownie, like the creature.
Oh, yeah.
Here, I'll show you.
He's like, got elfin ears and everything. Yeah, I'm looking him up.
Wow, look at this weirdo.
He's so cute. He is so cute. And I love him.
What a weird mascot for them.
That's like really old school and weird. I kind of love this.
Yeah, and the Browns are the worst team and always have been. The Browns are famously bad. And now I cheer for the Browns.
In terms of terrifying mascots, you know, there's like, oh, the Eagles, they'll scratch out your eyes.
Yeah.
And the Bears, this is like the Cleveland Browns. They'll come into your cupboard at night and take your sugar.
I do love how like housebound brownies are as a concept.
Yeah, they have no place on a football field.
Well, maybe they are in the arena's larder, perhaps hanging out. Maybe they are fed voluminous amounts of lard and fat, so that they are good-willed and good-natured towards the home team Browns. And then they go and perform their brownie antics upon the visiting team.
You know, I could see like maybe anytime there's sort of a freak play or an accident or someone gets injured on the game, you're like, oh, that was the brownie.
The brownies
like,
do that.
Like Aaron Rodgers, you know, is out now for the season after the first game, first run.
Brownie the elf did it.
Brownie did it. If you zoomed in on his little ankle, Brownie was there with just a little knife going, yeah!
Just like, stabbed him. Just jumping on it and stabbing away.
Just slice the ACL, yeah.
Now, Brownie the Elf did exist when the team was created. So, but here's why I think it's interesting, right? They probably had a little bit of remnants of Brownie lore in those times, you know? Like, it's like Ohio, right? That's a white English town, if there ever was one, you know?
Yeah.
So, or maybe a little Irish as well.
It also looks like at some point they had a dog mascot called Chomps.
Not as cool as Brownie. Sorry, Chomps.
I'm weirdly digging like the brownie like mascot outfit as well.
He's cool. He's got like sock shoes.
Yep.
And he's got a little tuft of hair that comes out of the front of his cap, his brownie cap.
I mean, it is admittedly just a Keebler elf. Like, I'm looking at a Keebler elf.
The football is too small for him to be the right size, but it's still that he's holding.
Well, they made him a little tiny football. Chad.
Oh, they made him a little tiny football. Yeah, okay.
He would be really upset if they didn't make him a little tiny football.
You would cut all of your ACLs.
There would be not an ACL left on the team if he didn't get a little tiny football.
Them all flapping up like a wind shade on everyone's legs.
Oh, terrible. Oh, so that sounds disgusting.
I'm looking at a picture of him interacting with the like the dog mascot for Cleveland Browns, like it's a changing of the guard.
He whispered. Like, he whispered into his ear, like, "Your days are numbered, dog."
Man,
He said the old words and the dog ceased to exist.
One day we'll all meet our replacements that way.
The dog has just been walking around, its ears ringing, not hearing any words spoken to it since it heard the words.
He let Chomps just wander off into the wilderness.
Yeah. You know what? You brought up the Keebler Elves. I just want to talk about that real quick. They're brownies, right? Like, they're not like, we refer to them as elves because I think it is a nomenclature that anyone could understand from a marketing perspective, but he is Brownie the Elf for that same reason. But he is a brownie, and so are the, I think the Keebler Elves are also brownies because they're tiny little elves, and they live in a kitchen, and they're very good at cooking.
So are you saying any food-based elf is a brownie?
Any kitchen-based, like as Kevin said, any kitchen-based creature is a...
Yeah.
Not any kitchen-based creature, but they are a kitchen-based creature.
Yeah. They have a household quality to them.
Mm-hmm. By the way, this is for Chad. Keebler is from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania.
Welcome to Goosebuds. My name is Kevin.
I'm Paul.
I'm Chad.
Today we began the first step of our journey towards a new Goosebumps universe. We read the first Horrorland book, Revenge of the Living Dummy, published in 2008 by R.L. Stein
Corporation. I'm pulling it up to see who really published this one. It's got to be Scholastic, right?
Yeah, Scholastic is on the cover. Yeah,
this was testing.
It was okay. Yeah. All right. Well, let's lay the groundwork for why this was testing.
And again, to hype everyone up, because they should be excited. It's not just an entire series about Horrorland, arguably one of the best books in the series.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
It's got Slappy, their flagship monster.
Can it really be called one of the best books in the series if it's done this to us?
Well, okay.
Is the original Halloween still good, even if all the other Halloweens have happened? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. No. And like, I think the Horrorland portion of this book was the best part. I honestly wish he had started with that part.
Yeah, I don't understand why we have two-thirds of a book plus another third of a different
book. We will seriously need to discuss that by the end of this. Okay, so like, there are 18 of these books coming at us.
Okay.
Not 19, I'm sorry, 19.
Oh, God.
purportedly, they have a continuous story throughout them.
Yeah.
Sort of.
Okay.
Maybe.
If he commits to that.
If he commits to that, we'll say.
He just gives up halfway through. We're leaving Horrorland. It's Camp Werewolf now.
I will not be surprised. Here's the thing. This book is... How many Slappy books are we in now?
This was the seventh one. Let me see.
I'm looking at the thing. There's been a lot of them. We should maybe do research before we start this podcast.
No.
That's not why people enjoy this podcast.
No, they're not here for the scholarly critique.
So there's Night of the Living Dummy, Night of the Living Dummy 2. Mm-hmm. He has a small mention in Escape from the Carnival of Horrors. I don't think that counts.
No, that doesn't count.
Night of the Living Dummy 3.
Yep.
All right.
Bride of the Living Dummy.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
4.
Slappy's Nightmare, which was the last one we read, which was awful. That was 5. So this is 6.
Okay. So, yeah. And here's why I'm mad.
Okay. I'd love to know.
Among countless other reasons in this hellish existence, I'm mad because because Slappy, we've been here, we've done this, and now we're in book one of a new paradigm. 2008. It has been about a decade since the last books, maybe not a decade, at least been a couple years since the last book came out, right?
Yeah.
It's a fresh start. He's had some time to recoup and recover.
To think about what Slappy can do.
To think about what he can do.
It doesn't seem like that, though.
It does not, because literally...
Think about what you do before you come out here.
Have a plan. Do your research, Slappy.
Junkie? Yeah.
He does not provide us with any new moments in this book.
Well...
Okay. Defend it, Kevin.
He isn't offering us anything new. There are no new morsels in here. But as far as moments, like, there is a shift because we are in 2008 currently. Right. So yes. Cell phones exist when they are convenient to exist.
Definitely. I have 100% thought about that. I was like, what happened to that cell phone? That was
Yeah. Facebook exists if it wants to exist. Yeah.
Do you mean FacePlace?
FacePlace, yeah.
Manga fucking comics exist.
Manga comics exist, yeah.
I think RL's ever read a manga? Not to distract, just that seems a really important question.
I think RL 100% does his research, and it's like, what did the kids like? He's got, probably at this point, maybe niece and nephew, or not niece and nephew, grandchildren maybe are giving him, I don't know how old his kids are, but like, maybe his kids were into manga at this time. Who knows?
When you say do his research, you mean walk through Barnes & Noble on the way to the Goosebump books to put them all over the store and then see what other kids are doing and then leave.
That's how he can write it off as a tax write-off.
Yeah.
I think perhaps his editor just gave him a list of things that the kids are
the children's like. I want to know. Well, we'll get to the manga. I do really want to know. We're gonna theorize on what manga Slappy was reading in 2008 when we get there.
I like One Piece.
I think Gantz had just started, so maybe he was reading Gantz.
Isn't that super fucked up? Isn't that like weird sex horror?
Gantz is like Battle Royale, right?
I don't know. I actually never read Gantz. I looked up what manga came out in that year, and that was one of them.
My dad really likes Gantz. I'll ask him.
Okay, please.
Kevin, that's great, because I thought Gantz was like a horny as hell manga, so that's awesome.
There's definitely a lot of butts in the anime, if I recall correctly.
Okay.
Cool.
Okay.
Cool. God, Kevin, your dad's so cool.
We're never going to stop talking about it. I'll tell you this much. He's not reading Solanine, which is a book that came out in 2008. That's for sure.
Oh, my God. Solanine's so good.
You know what? Okay, I did look it up, and I think we don't have to go over this later now that we've done this, but I looked it up. Slam Dunk was out. He's 100% reading Slam Dunk. Slappy is a jock, without a doubt.
If you guys haven't read Solanine, you really should read Solanine.
I have not.
I read it for Heart Cannon a couple years ago with a friend of the show, Calamity Carl.
Hello, Carl.
And it's stuck with me a lot. It's just a really depressing but good story.
Yeah, I own it, and I'm kind of, you've talked about how depressing it is, and I'm a little nervous to start it.
It's going to bum you out in the middle and then lift you up again.
Okay. Then so, if it's
cool.
If it lifts me back up, that's okay.
Yeah, I didn't realize that was 2008. That's really interesting.
Yeah.
But it definitely not on RL's radar, I guess.
No.
So Brittany Crosby and her friend Molly Malloy.
Molly Malloy.
Amazing name.
Mm-hmm.
I would say start this book off with one of our best cold open chapters in Goosebumps. It's interesting. It's like a rainy night. They're digging a hole in a grave.
It may be slightly cliche, but at least it sets up a scene and a tone for the book. At least it does that.
I really wish I hadn't been reading The Last Unicorn in between this book. I'm finding it so difficult to praise RL for even the faintest amount of storytelling. But yes, this at least got me asking questions, you know?
Yeah.
And this is what I liked about the book. I'll give a thing that I liked about it. And I think it is a benefit to this idea that these books will build a world. I think for once, R.L. Stine was forced to make a character that he knew he was going to have to keep going beyond the single book that he was pumping out for that month. And because of that, I think Brittany is kind of funny and kind of cute. Like in like she's got like a cute little humor to her where she's got like a sarcasm and she's got like a good little personality on her. She's kind of intelligent. She's emotionally available. She's good.
I did not see anything unique to Brittany than any other protagonist, but I will give Brittany more of a chance in future books.
Brittany just strikes me as kind of dumb and like,
you don't think I think she's got like an intelligence about her.
I feel bad for her because her parents are horrible.
Well, she's got classic. She's got we got to come up with like a name for the like the like when you have goosebumps parents, you know, like a as if it were like some sort of like thing you could have, yeah, like a phobia or a, I don't know.
It's definitely a mark that'll follow you for the rest of your life.
For sure.
Raised in a goosebumps parent household.
They are as bad as any goosebump parent we've encountered.
Seeing the mention of a glass coffin was interesting early on. And some inexplicable page-filling raccoon description.
The raccoon thing was interesting. I was wondering if that was going to come back, but I think it was just there to put some cute little guys in.
Yeah, oh, the raccoons are going by. They wonder what we're burying. Oh, are they going to intervene? Are they going to tell the animal police? No, they're going to keep moving past.
It's a good dose of animal fear that I know RL loves to... Just non-human creature slander.
Now, if Brittany and Molly had like a small dog with them, I'd be like, "Oh, be very careful! That raccoon might attack your small dog."
Mm-hmm. I mostly love this opening chapter, and I do say love because it is a refuge. It is a refuge from the most terrible character.
Oh my god! Oh my god!
I've ever had to suffer through. I think in my 2.5 years of reading Goosebumps books with you,
Ethan is the worst character.
Really?
Yes. And I think he was so bad, RL drops him 2/3 of the way through the book and never looks back.
I think why I didn't immediately love Brittany as you did, Paul, was because she wouldn't beat Ethan to death.
Why do you guys hate Ethan so much?
I wrote this note, Chad, and I meant it. I wrote, I would kill Ethan and I would accept the consequences.
Wow.
If I was also a child, because I don't think adults should be mean to children, but if I was also a child, I would beat Ethan to death with a hockey stick.
Yeah, children can kill children, but adults can't kill children.
If I could turn back time that once, I would use it to go back to child me and kill Ethan and then then spend the rest of my life in jail.
Yeah. He's like the same as like most book antagonists. I did not see where you guys are coming
from.
He
kicks people for fun. He burps in their ear. Feet, he stomps on their ears. He's pure annoyance.
It's all too real, too, because I've known children of this ilk.
I have known Ethan. I'll tell you why Ethan won himself over to me.
He won you over?
I can't tell if Chad is bidding as we have bit upon Chad in the past, but...
the entire book, I was like, why are we writing this from Brittany's perspective? Get us to Ethan, because Ethan's got the doll. It was making me so mad. Here's why I liked Ethan.
Okay.
When Ethan, I think in one of the first couple chapters, he kicks Brittany or Molly, and it's described that he does, like, a tap dance after stepping on their foot, and then, like, a little, like, shimmy like jazz hands thing,
and that's why you like him. That's
he's a showman.
That's why you like
him. I like the bully that put a little extra like oomph into his tormenting. I was like, oh, this guy knows how to tap dance. That's fun.
You're saying you like a beating and a show.
Yeah Chad, I respect the hell out of the bit. I know.
It's not a bit. It's like it makes it more of the Joker than like a Bane.
Great,
you know?
Great bit, Chad.
Yeah, Chad, in order for me to continue associating with you, that is a fantastic bit.
Excited to hear how this bit...
It's a fictional character!
Excited to hear how this bit evolves throughout the episode, Chad.
No, I agree. He is a
no. Don't say anything nice about him.
No, he's meant to be hated. He's meant to be despised. And
As far as those type of characters go, I found Ethan slightly more interesting than the usual ones. But that's about it.
They definitely make him empathizable. So we should clarify who Ethan is to the listener who hasn't read. Brittany is our main character. What's her friend's name?
Molly Malloy.
It's just Molly. Molly.
That's right.
He added an extra O into the last name.
And Molly Malloy is like a famous person from.
Is it
from Ireland? Like a famous like mythical person? Maybe no. What? No, they're a dancer. They were a dancer. They still are a dancer.
Oh.
I knew the name was a name of a person who actually existed.
It sounds like it could be a common name.
Anyways, so Molly and Brittany are burying something in the first chapter of this book. And then we find out in the first real chapter, chapter two, that Ethan is Brittany's cousin. And he comes from a troubled family that we never learn about.
Yeah, we know his parents are sick.
His parents are sick, but also hate him because he stinks. And he has to live with Brittany's family for a couple of weeks.
I assume Brittany meant that Ethan's parents are sick and that they're totally radical and they don't want this horrible child weighing them down.
They're too ill, aka cool as hell, to care about this kid.
Poor Ethan.
Yeah.
Nah.
Nah. I do like all of the... do I like this? I don't know. I did notice all of the... he tries to put this in more of a, like, kid lingo. There's a Chandler Bing level sarcasm running through.
That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. There's a... Chad, thank you for sending a picture of a Philadelphia restaurant called Molly Malloy's. Maybe that's why I recognize the name.
Yeah.
I think that Brittany is written a little older than maybe a normal character. Like, I read her as maybe, like, 14 or 15.
Stayed to be 12.
Well, she seems older in the sense that she does have like a bit of a wit to her, even if it's not the most clever witticisms or anything like that. But I do think that like she has like a couple lines that I thought were, you know, just kind of like, for instance, Ethan has a doll when he shows up and we know it's Slappy. And he introduces Slappy as, "This is Mr. Bad Boy," Ethan said.
Oh.
"Mr. Bad Boy is my best friend." And she just responds, "Totally pitiful," I thought. And like, there's not, it's not the funniest line, but it is like kind of funny to imagine her thinking that. And then like when she sees the bad things happening at the dinner and she's laughing about them, instead of, I think in past books, the kid would have gotten mad, but she laughs things off a lot more than the kids typically do, which I appreciated and I thought made her a little more likable than most of your protagonists.
Can we talk about Mr. Bad Boy, by the way?
Oh, we'll get that. I guess we can just kind of skip to that. Like, other than the introduction of his family being sick, they talk about her mom, who's clumsy. Brittany has a really weird descriptions of her mom throughout this, where she really talks about how good she looks in her clothes a lot, which I thought was really strange.
Yeah, I just wrote down, Brittany's got a hot mom.
Yeah, she's got a hot mom. And it's funny because, like, it wasn't that I thought Brittany thought she was hot. It was just that I felt like RL was imagining someone very attractive in his mind. And he couldn't help himself but write it that way.
Yeah, she's got a hot mom.
I feel like RL was imagining what female relationships are like. And he's like, they probably just compliment each other on how hot they are.
Yeah, they think about how hot each other. I'll give you, like, I have a quote set aside here. This is Brittany looking at her mom, really feeling her. Mom said, brushing off the front of her jeans, "She wears tight designer jeans, and she looks pretty good in them."
That's kind
of
wild.
A weird sentence for a daughter to think of her mom. I mean, I guess that's fine. You know, like,
also, the mom calls their dad, what is it, blonde freak?
Yeah.
Yeah, the blonde freak.
And he loves it. Well, because he's got a hot wife, so he'll say whatever. He'll take whatever. Yeah.
He's
got nothing to prove.
He is a freak. He's like, yeah.
Also, I don't remember the quote, but I have a note here that apparently RL Doug, I think some Ethan's parents are philosophy professors, and he says something about them not being attractive. And I was like, you don't think there's an attractive philosophy professor out there? Have you seen Chidi from The Good Place? That guy's hot as hell.
Oh my God. Yeah.
He took his shirt off and he was super ripped, surprising everyone.
Don't be dismissing the philosophy professors, RL.
It's just he was wearing glasses and we didn't know.
That was the problem. That's what it is. It's about her mom.
She's all that.
That's right. It was her mom. She says that she wears glasses, which makes her look like a philosophy professor, which not the dig you think it is, RL.
But under that 36, 24, 36.
I like that Brittany is like, I made a list of all of my good points. And one of them is, I try to understand my friends.
That's what I'm saying. She's emotionally intelligent and available. She's a good person. I like Brittany.
She's going to get us through 18, 19 books of Horrorland.
I don't think I've seen her actually trying to understand or succeeding in understanding her friends throughout this book.
I think she talks about Molly at one point and she discusses like what Molly's kind of hang-ups are, but she accepts them and she's okay and she works with them.
And she tries to understand.
She does not try to understand Ethan, though. She's done trying to understand Ethan.
No.
We all understand Ethan.
Well, as soon as Ethan comes in with a doll named Mr. Bad Boy that tells you everything you need to know about Ethan.
Mr. Bad Boy.
So either Ethan named the doll, that we understand is Slappy, but they haven't said a slap yet. Either Ethan named it Mr. Bad Boy, which is one embarrassing.
I thought you'd be all about Mr. Bad Boy.
Mr. Bad Boy took me out every time it was said in this book. I could, whatever the opposite of horror is, I was removed from it and just kept picturing P. Diddy doing a little shrug dance.
He was Mr. Bad Boy in the 90s, you're right.
Yeah, well, because also, like, but again, he called himself Mr. Bad Boy, which made him not a bad boy. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh, yeah. He's no Chris Kirkpatrick from NSYNC, I'll say that much.
Yeah, I mean, he had beef with Eminem. Or Slappy has already started to take control of Ethan, which is how I was starting to assume this relationship going. And that means Slappy told Ethan, call me Mr. Bad Boy, which is even more embarrassing.
Yeah, it's embarrassing. It's embarrassing for everyone involved. Here's the thing. We do find out that Ethan named him Mr. Bad Boy. We are massively misdirected to believe that Slappy called himself that. I think as a way to maybe make us question, has Slappy lost it? Is Slappy not with it as much as he used to be?
Yeah, I was also curious. This is not the first time, I think, that there's been a Slappy book where Slappy is introduced with an alias.
Yeah.
As if Slappy is, like, hopping the country, wanted, and has to change their name. What does the book and the story gain from us as a reader not knowing it's Slappy immediately?
It is the number one sin that I think so many Goosebumps books indulge themselves in. And it is the sin of making the reader know more than the protagonist. And
sure,
that happens in basically every one of these books.
It'll inevitably happen in any book where the title tells you everything you need to know
right,
about the book.
Right. Like The Last Unicorn, which ruined that book for me.
Does Arl think we're going to get to the point where we find out that Mr. Bad Boy is Slappy, like, halfway through, and go, oh my god, that's Slappy! And then, like, he's on the cover! Slappy's on the cover of this fucking book! We know who it is!
I think it is a clever misdirect how we're led to believe that Ethan is being bullied by Slappy into being terrible, even though it's pretty clear that Ethan doesn't have to do all of the shitty things he does.
Right.
I'm not going to say it's artfully done, but it caught me by surprise.
I was hoodwinked by this one. I will admit to having not seen the twist coming in this one.
Sounds like a pretty good book.
That's why we give this a full bump.
5 bags of popcorn. We haven't even talked about the most, I think what I think is the most interesting part of this entire book in the beginning is not Slappy, not saying Slappy. It is not emotionally intelligent Brittany. It is not tap dancing bully Ethan.
Yes.
It is Molly Malloy, who I would say is much more the usual Goosebumps protagonist.
Uh-huh.
Because
yes.
Molly's uncle.
Her dad.
Her dad has essentially, like, I kept thinking of the people that the Conjuring movies are based off of, Ed and Lorraine, where they had like an attic filled with like spooky paranormal things and a possessed doll.
If Mr. Malloy handed you a business card, it would say dummy and haunted toy specialist on it.
Yes. Yes.
Which is cool.
He's got a bunch of wild stuff from other countries. Therefore, they are scary. up in his attic.
He's got stuff from Mumba.
Mumba.
Yeah, oh yeah, yeah. Molly had a shirt called Mumba Rules.
That's a funny shirt. That's honestly funny. I like that joke.
I thought that was silly. I thought the Museum of the Weird was pretty silly.
Yeah. And I think the Mind Stealer is awesome.
Mind Stealer is cool as hell.
Yeah, so we should explain this. This is a shrunken head doll.
Yep.
Yeah.
Presumably taken from its people and its culture.
In Mumba,
and brought over to, from Mumba. It was taken by force. And placed in a super thick glass case like it's Magneto so that it cannot escape.
I figured that was so no one would touch it, because if you touch it, it steals your mind.
Well, yeah, that's probably the more important thing.
I mean, he's Magneto, but you have to turn yourself into metal and put yourself in front of him for it to work.
Which is actually how Magneto got out in one of the movies.
Is it?
Yeah, somebody got dosed with extra iron in their blood by Mystique. And then
Mystique drugged him with a bunch of iron.
Oh, yeah. Sick.
Magneto fatalities in them. It's pretty sick.
That's dope.
Paul, have you not seen X2?
I don't know.
I've seen it. That's the only scene I remember from it. And it was cool as hell.
I definitely saw the first one. And then I think I saw the second one and was like, well, done with these.
What are you talking about? It's the best one. Nightcrawler tries to kill the president.
It's a fairly... it's a fairly tumultuous time those movies came out for America.
Sorry. Anyway, so in this museum attic, there's this mind stealer doll, and you might be going as a reader, go, huh? That's another doll in a book about a haunted doll. Mm.
So we get there because it's because Ethan sucks and they need to get out of the house. It's really like anything they can do to maybe reduce Ethan's annoyance powers, and that's like maybe we can move around and he'll get tired.
Yeah, this was like insane to me that basically Ethan bruises Brittany with Mr. Bad Boy immediately, 5 seconds of him being there.
Upon the head, bruises her. And then he, on the way, while they're trying to wear him down through activity, he is burping and trying to step on feet. He is actively antagonistic at all moments.
Yep.
He's terrible.
Yep.
And so they bring him to her house as an attempt to wear him out. And that is when Dad has just so happened to get home, Mr. Malloy. He takes them up because he's got something really creepy to show them, and it's the Mind Stealer. And then this great moment happens where Brittany is bending down to check it out, and then someone says, "Hey, baby, give me a kiss." And she jumps and bangs her head. Another head hit occurs. And she screams, "Oh no, my mind!"
I love "Oh no, my mind."
I also really loved "Oh no, my mind." And then, but okay, this happens at the end of chapter 5, and then chapter 6 begins. And I just need to pull it up. Yep. Give me 1 second. I'm going to pull up chapter 6.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
Instantly, she feels a buzz, and she screams, "Oh no, my mind!" And then and then chapter 7 begins. Whoa, wait! I heard the buzz again. My brain whirred. It took me so long to realize the doll wasn't buzzing. The sound came from my cell phone that I have that I'll forget to use later. So she lets out a sigh of relief. We never talk about the fact that she smacked her head into something. She just kind of moves on from it. Very strange. And then it's just her mom's texting her, "It's time to go home for dinner."
Yeah. We should probably keep track, especially if she's our recurring character, how many head injuries that she takes.
Certainly. She's got...
So we're on two.
So Brittany misses having a room because Ethan is moving into Brittany's room. And Brittany's moving into the sewing room for absolutely no reason. Her parents are just awful. And so Brittany's taking her stuff out of her old room, including a Skull Boy poster.
It's Fallout Boy, right?
Oh, how dare you!
It is. No, it is, though.
No, it's My Chemical Romance.
I was thinking it could be My Chemical Romance. I do think it's more based on Davey Havoc than it is on Peter Wells.
It's AFI.
I kind of got an Insane Clown Posse vibe from it just by the fact that one of the band leader's name is Buzzy.
Buzzy, yeah.
Yeah. That no one in Fall Out Boy would have a dumb name like Buzzy. Patrick Stump is a serious name.
Fall Out Boy is just a Simpsons reference. So,
yeah, it's a sick reference.
I think it's probably. Here's what I think. It is an amalgamation. Definitely visually more Davey Havoc or My Chemical Romance, right?
Sure.
What's the name of the guy from My Chemical Romance? I don't remember his name anymore.
Gerard
Way.
Yeah, Gerard Way and Davey Havoc are kind of like the look, because he's a dark boy with tattoos and sleeveless shirts and stuff like that. But it has, I think the name, Chad, I'm sorry to say it, I think the name is based off of Fallout Boy.
Maybe.
I like Skull Boy because it's singular. Like, no one in the band is Skull Boy.
Yeah.
They are Skull Boy collectively.
Yeah, Buzzy is not Skull Boy.
I was just thrown because there were sentences like, "Mr. Bad Boy likes Skull Boy." Like, I was just like, what is going on here?
Boy.
Just, I don't know. Boy. And then I think Ethan claims that because he wants the poster, instead the kids are fighting over the poster, and he's like, "Mr. Bad Boy, Buzzy is his favorite." I'm like, does Slappy have a crush on like Gerard Way? What is going on?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. I do too.
He's got those eyes.
He created the Unbarrel Academy. That's pretty, and made the Black Parade. That's pretty good.
Yeah. We see a little glimpse of Brittany's life and the things she values. We see a painting of her dead dog, Phoebe. We learned that there's a painterly aspect to Brittany, which I quite like. Yes. Be my favorite part of her personality is I don't think we get a whole lot of creative Goosebumps characters.
No, and this is another thing that made me endeared to her is that she has a painting of her dog that passed away, and she looks at it and she goes, this reminds me of my beautiful dog that I loved. And she's a likable character, guys. This is not a bit. I think she's a likable character. I do think that RL was like, I'm gonna need to care about this kid. I'm gonna have to care about this one for a couple books at least. So
is it Brittany or Molly that's doing? I did think it was interesting. Their unique multimedia project.
Molly is a very good painter. Molly's a talented painter.
Well, one, I can't remember if it was Molly or Brittany in our class, is doing a thing where they paint like a planet, like an alien landscape, and then they cut out pictures of celebrities out of magazines.
I believe that is Brittany that is doing that one.
That's Brittany. That's a interesting, mixed media art is all I'm saying.
Mm-hmm. No, it's cool.
Yeah.
They're cool kids.
Cool kids. Hope they don't die.
I hoped Ethan would die.
Me too. He disappears, which is as good as dying.
It's weird that there's no punishment for Ethan, because we know that he's even more fucked up than we believe him to be.
yes, what we learn about him takes him... The little morsel of sympathy we are allowed to gain for Ethan in this book is destroyed at the turn of this book.
He's a tap dancer. He's talented.
Brittany comes home to find her poster ripped in half, Buzzy's face removed, and also the painting of her dead dog has been defaced.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it was a signed poster. All of Skullboy had signed it.
Yep.
And when she tries to snitch on Mr. Bad Boy, she's pushed down the stairs.
And he says, don't ever snitch on me again.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, she finds out that Mr. Bad Boy is sentient.
Yeah, so the way she learns this is, so he's doing the classic slappy stuff, sitting on at Ethan's hand and cracking wise at Brittany about her looks and her smells, and then he sits up at one point.
Yeah, she goes upstairs to the attic looking for Ethan and is like, Slappy just... He's just laying there on the bed all seductively, his head on his pillow, just like hanging out. He likes a good pillow,
too. And he says, I am alive and I hate you, Brittany.
And then when she tries to tell on him, she gets pushed down the steps.
And then she gets pushed down the steps, which is a rehash. He's pushed many children down the steps.
Classic slappy prank.
Classic slappy move.
And then the book decides it wants to do something else now. Suddenly we're dragged to Molly and her problems, and she's like, I got a call from Mumba, and we got to bury the mind stealer before it steals our minds. We got to bury it in a human graveyard.
Yep.
And so we find ourselves back at the beginning of the book with that teaser chapter where they're just burying the mind stealer in a glass case in a graveyard. But now Ethan's showing up, and that's about it. But this is where we think Slappy gets a good look at the mind stealer.
Yes, it is. And this part drove me fucking nuts. I really hated Ethan. they're burying the mind stealer, a dangerous object, according to many people in the book. And Ethan knows this.
Yeah.
Ethan is being terrorized, supposedly, by Mr. Bad Boy. Mr. Bad Boy is holding him hostage, making him take his cousin's posters and destroy them. He's being a real dick to everybody, including Ethan. Ethan should be sympathizing with the two people burying the mind stealer right now. But what's he doing? He's trying to step on fucking feet and trying to push people into the hole while there are doll antics happening here. Fuck you, Ethan.
It's fucked up, man. It's
I hate him.
I hate this universe. I hate that there's no shred of kindness or human decency in Goosebumps. It just makes me sad.
There's no hope for anyone in this world.
No, there's no hope or light anywhere for anyone, monster or man.
So what happens next?
So Ethan sucks. He bothers them while they're burying the mind stealer, but they bury it anyway, despite the nonsense that he puts out into the world around them. And then I think this, I don't remember what happens next. They presage this earlier in the book that they're going to have to do.
Oh yeah. The old folks home thing.
Oh my God.
Okay.
That's right.
Okay. First off, this happened before, right? Didn't they take Slappy to a retirement community and he did a stand-up routine?
I think you're thinking of one of the many, like, Slappy is on stage and ruining it for everybody.
This time, in this point in the book, I was like, I have read every one of these scenes
already. This scene has definitely happened in maybe a slightly different context. I could have sworn he went to another retirement community in one of the other five books that we've read about this character. Maybe he did not. The only saving grace of this scene is that the elderly people are ripping on Brittany, and it's pretty funny.
Is that a saving grace, and is it funny, or is it just more that no one in this universe is worth anything? There is no kindness and no gentleness and no understanding.
It is that, and I am grasping for anything, Kevin.
I understand that most old folks home entertainment is just like, can you just go and be there? Do any was Brittany just showing off her paintings there? Was that what was it?
She was gonna give them like a lesson of some sort, and like,
yeah, she was Bob Rossing. She was like, here's how you do a sunset.
Okay, now that makes more sense. Yeah.
But I don't but I Molly's a better painter, I'm pretty sure. Like, so I think they should have gotten Molly to do this, but I guess that they can only really get her. So it's fine.
Yeah.
It's okay.
Well, she's got the inn with the senior center because her great aunt's there.
Yeah, her great aunt goes to Sunset House, as this is called,
which is dark,
a depressing name for a
You know, Slappy throws paint around. He yells at the old folks. You get it.
He has a couple of insults that are pretty tame, all things considered.
Yeah,
you know, old people smell.
And he says I'm a bad boy a lot.
I'm a bad boy, but the old people are so incensed.
Like, how do you think he says it?
I'm a bad boy.
that's a good one.
I can't even top that, Kevin. I had this exact question I wanted to ask you guys. I think it's I'm a bad boy.
Yeah, I was kind of thinking it was a little sing-songy like that.
I'll tell you, no matter how I heard it in my head, wasn't scary.
Never scary. Never once is it scary. He says it a lot as he's being a bad boy in front of all the people. Here's the part of the book that absolutely incensed me, and at this point, I was ready to close it. I would have loved to stop reading at this point. This is the ultimate goosebumps parent moment, because we have just had a room full of witnesses watch Ethan be a shithead.
And Brittany's the one who pays for it.
Brittany pays for it fully. It makes me want to die.
I'm with you, Paul. I want to put on the clown makeup and be fun and dance around.
that's my clown laugh.
And you know, honk my shoes and like squirt something from a flower on my chest. But god damn it, it's
I can't. It's just it's too much at this point.
We got 18 more of these ahead of us, and this is it. This is what we get. Like, just
Fear Street was doing so well. I was like, oh man, this is fun. Yeah. Maybe Arl started to pick it up again. Oh no.
I do think the writing is better in this one. I do think he does a little bit less of the things that I hated in the original Goosebumps series. Yeah. I think he was capable of writing better than that since then. Because we saw it in Fear Street. But I think that what he did was he really chugged through those books and he did not really care. He just wanted to make... I've been really contemplating as I've been reading these. I'm like, wow, this is just... Like, we know this is a money-making scheme, but you really... You really see it. And then, like, you get to this one and you're like, okay, maybe right now he is trying to put together... At the beginning of this, I'm like, maybe he's trying to put together a really, like, a well-written children's horror book here.
But then
I'm getting into it and I'm like, no, this is all the same shit. It's just that he maybe wrote a little bit more. Maybe he did a couple more drafts for this one. Because the writing is better. It has less of the filler than he normally did. That's the only thing I will give this. Less filler. Not any more killer.
Very, very little killing.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, isn't like the morality tale some kind of component of horror?
Yeah. You're supposed to learn something. We don't learn anything in this book.
Yeah, why include a character as reprehensible as Ethan? I guess if everything's a joke to you, like it is to RL, like jovial Bob Stein, then it's just, I'm really feeling the nihilism in this more than in any other Goosebumps.
Me too. I think that the Horrorland portion, which I'm excited to get to because I will actually enjoy talking about it, is the that's the wheelhouse. That's where he should be. If he wants to be nihilistic and he wants to not teach you anything with his tale,
yeah,
be funny, be goofy, make it all goofy. Yeah, yeah. Go, you got to go bigger than what you're doing. When you keep it too realistic like this, and I use that term very, very, very loosely. But like when you're trying to be realistic like this, yeah, you need to give us something like, what are you trying to say to us? You know, like, what is the point of Ethan? What is the point of Brittany other than a vessel for your demented doll boy, your bad boy to do stuff to?
Mr. Bad Boy. Yeah. Well, I mean, I was thinking about this as I read it and where at this point in the story, I'm like, well, it's Slappy. Slappy's got Ethan under control, right? Mm-hmm. So, like, what is, and this kind of goes back to some of the other books, Slappy doesn't have any morality or thematic things to him whatsoever. What do we actually know about Slappy? One, he wants slaves.
Mm-hmm.
Two, there is a vaguely non-Western phrase that activates him, implying magic from another continent.
Three, he's made of coffin wood.
Yep.
He's made of coffin wood. That's about it. And like, there's nowhere like, oh, he's trying to recreate the old days of a 1920s entertainment, or like a weird Joker morality where as long as it's funny, it's okay to him, or a hatred for children because children killed him. There's like nothing.
Any goal. He has no goal other than like you said, Kevin, nihilism. He's a Joker. He wants to see the world burn, but he doesn't. And even the Joker has more of a, I think, an outlook than this guy does.
I understand the Joker in the dark. Yeah, more than what Slappy wants.
Yeah.
But the Joker himself is a character. Slappy is a joke. He's a play on the Napoleon complex. And it's funny because Slappy is small, and yet he exerts his power in a way that does not fit his size.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And yet an entire generation of ours all swears that Slappy is absolutely terrifying.
I only found him terrifying because I was truly scared of Chucky, and Slappy kind of looked like Chucky.
I find the world in which this is set and the and the humans within it to be more terrifying than the monsters.
Yeah.
Maybe we should move on past this moment to get out of this nihilism hole we're in.
magic. We learn from Molly that hey, you know how my dad said that he recognized Mr. Bad Boy? Well, guess what? He's a cursed doll. You're not going crazy. Look, here's all this information on him. And so they go and they look at Professor Malloy's files, and it's like, oh yeah, here's Slappy's backstory. It says he can be woken up or put to sleep. I didn't know. Has it always been the same phrase?
Yeah.
But the phrase always wakes him up or puts him to sleep. You speak it. Yeah. But the phrase is just out there with this phrase. And then they're like, great, let's go get him. So they go up to Brittany's former room to speak the phrase to deactivate Mr. Bad Boy, a.k.a. Slappy, and free everyone, Ethan included, from his tyranny.
Yep.
And on their way, they note the PlayStation discs and the manga and the dirty clothes strewn about Ethan's room.
Mm-hmm.
And they speak the phrase. And they're like, that did it. We've turned him off. But guess what? He was never turned on. He's been turned on now. Ethan must have been some kind of computer genius because he did computers to the puppet to make it say things.
So Ethan sucks. Ethan 100% sucks. He's been torturing and preying upon people's sympathy for him.
Yep.
He's a total reprehensible piece of crap. He never appears again in the book. He's gone.
But also, that is pretty strange. But also, what a brilliant young mind to be able to program remote control animatronics with 2000s.
It's pretty incredible what he did.
Is it incredible? Because in RL's world, like, a microchip can also hold memories of, like, human beings or whatever.
Uh-huh.
So, like, I don't know what a microchip means in a Goosebumps book anymore. Like, he did his own kind of tech magic, I guess.
Yeah.
Ethan does computers, and he put a microchip on the dummy, and that's how it talks.
We learn all of this after. So she finds out that the dummy has been Ethan's doing. And Molly's like, what you gonna do? And she's like, I'm gonna get him. She gets real Sicilian here. She's like, I'm gonna get him back when the time is right. And so, which I respect. And she goes to sleep and is awoke by Slappy hitting her and doing the stuff that Slappy does. And then Slappy runs off saying that he's going to go get the mind stealer. And for some reason, she doesn't grab the incantation. She just decides to just run out the door after him. She chases him all the way to the graveyard. Question for you guys. How did Slappy know where the head was buried?
No idea.
Well, I think he might have been still conscious, though, like locked away when Ethan took him to the gravesite.
I don't think he has him when he's there.
I'm pretty sure he never puts him down.
You might be right. I would like to cross reference that because I feel like he wasn't there.
Please put it under the microscope.
I'm gonna have to.
Why does he even want the mind taker?
Take minds. Wants to amass and consolidate his power. He's also pretty ineffectual. Like, Brittany is just kind of like, no, and throws him off. So he's like, oh, man. Okay, well, I guess I'll get a magical brain-stealing gun from out of the dirt, and then people will have to listen to me.
It's not even good that you have to touch people with it, right?
Yeah.
So, like, Have a slappy. How about you just get a knife? That'd be scary. I mean, you just have a knife. You could also end people's minds by doing that, by touching people with a knife.
But you can't knife Slappy to death. So he's got to find the instrument of his own demise or something like that.
All right, I am at the point. So Ethan shows up. He appears from behind a tombstone and grabs her ankle and laughs and dances like a hyena. Very a great reason to like him, Chad. I'm really glad.
Do hyenas dance?
In their mangled way that they move, maybe you could consider that dancing. I do not believe he has the doll. It is never mentioned that he has the doll. The disgusting little doll. Dolls wouldn't. No, that's the. It is never mentioned that he has the doll. I don't think he has.
Maybe magic dolls can sense other magic dolls.
Okay, that's fair. If computer chips can contain memories of living beings, yeah, but let's do that. Yeah. That's fine.
Well, I'm glad we put that one to bed because that would have really bothered me. Brittany knows that Slappy with the power to steal minds would be a bad thing for the universe in general. Yep. And heroically, she goes to stop Slappy by wrestling the shit out of him in the rain in a graveyard, which is scary because it's a graveyard. You get it. It's, you know, because it's a graveyard.
Because dead people are there.
Because dead people are there, yep, you get it. And she's holding Slappy over her head, about to, you know, break him over her kneecap, when she's caught in the brights of her parents, her terrible, horrible parents, who show up and are like, what are you doing? Why are you wrestling with your cousin Ethan's beautiful, perfect doll? Why are you ruining this family? And
this is exactly what they say.
She's like, I'll be good. I just want to do one more thing. And she throws Slappy at the mind stealer glass, breaking the mind stealer glass and touching Slappy to the mind stealer. And she's like, all right, now I'll be good. Slappy is, I guess, mind stolen.
Well, real quick, you didn't mention the fact that her parents give her this talking to. And then she goes full fucking Lucha Libre and is like doing like back moonsaults onto him and like absolutely obliterating the body of this doll before her parents, who just said that they were going to take her to the doctor tomorrow. And she is going nuts on this thing. And then she does touch it to the mind stealer, but not before laying a smack down upon Mr. Bad Boy.
The doctor threat is so fucked up, and I thought it was something we moved past in like Goosebumps 2000. Like the fact that going to the doctor is something bad. Because we had like sensitive parents being like, oh, do you want us to take you to the doctor? Do you want that?
Yeah.
Like, I thought we were kind of beyond that.
All right, well, Arl's from an older generation where you just took anything that wasn't normal to the doctor. Yeah,
go get your head shrunk, you know?
Yes, so Slappy's defeated. We all agree.
And that's it. That's it.
Presumably Slappy is, even though he doesn't, I would argue he does not have a mind. If anything, he's a small gelatinous goo thing that we saw in one previous book.
Oh my god, he was like a little like slug man, wasn't he?
He was like a little slug man at one point. His essence was a little slug thing. And sure, if you want to say biologically, it has a mind, a brain. Sure, but that is now trapped in a shrunken head doll with up to 20 other people, according to Molly's dad.
Hana dolls ain't got no rights because they ain't got souls. She traps him in there, and then emanating from the dried shrunken head, Slappy says, "I'll be back, Brittany." And then Kevin, if you would like to do the honors,
I'm a bad boy.
And then we enter horror land, guys.
Finally,
new chapter reset, like new section starting chapter one of this new subsection with 2/3 of the book behind us and a really kind of like slapped together, slapping not intended.
Totally intended.
Now we're starting a new book that is the Horrorland portion of this book.
Here's my question. Did anything before this, chapter one of Enter Horrorland, actually happen? Does it matter if any of the things that happened before this happened?
But, well, as we're reading this, I'm like, they got to get to Horrorland at some point. It's called Goosebumps Horrorland. And
I know.
So I figured, like, well, Slappy's going to run away and she's going to follow Slappy and you're going to find out that he's going to Horrorland and he knew all about it. No.
No. She just gets invited to Horrorland, I guess, after Ethan is never talked about again.
Nope. Yeah, he's gone. We don't know what happens to him or his sick parents.
Ethan got recruited by the CIA and now does spy.
Stop trying to make Ethan cool, Jeff.
Working for the CIA
is not cool. That's not cool. But it would be cooler than anything Ethan has done, which is not saying much.
Yeah.
Somehow working for the horrible CIA would make Ethan a cooler person. Yeah, that's how much I despise him.
Makes him an interesting villain.
I think I hate Ethan more than the CIA. I think Ethan has done more damage to the global.
Kevin, I'm going to send you some operations that we committed on foreign countries, and you're going to change your mind.
Ethan has disrupted more governments worldwide than the CIA has.
Yeah, I can't get behind Ethan, but if the CIA is after Ethan, I'll support them.
Why don't you read Operation Condor? That'll change your mind.
Well, I am looking for a new book. So there's a bottomless quicksand pit advertised in Horrorland.
Incredible. Multiple times it's mentioned.
And a quicksand beach. Two mentions of quicksand right off the bat. And listener, imagine me reading this. I put my book down. I lowered my book down from my face and I shifted my eyes from side to side. That's what I did when I saw two mentions of quicksand that close to each other. Longtime listeners, you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
What's going on here?
Book of Names listeners, you know.
You know. Quicksand? Come on. Quicksand?
It's real. If this is your first episode, you have to go back.
Now, I don't doubt that a corporation like Horrorland with tremendous resources could invent artificial quicksand.
Yes. 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 Mm-hmm. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
I'm not saying quicksand is impossible. I'm saying it doesn't occur naturally.
Of course.
In the way we expect quicksand to be a natural sort of hazard. But
synthetic quicksand.
I think with what is displayed in Horrorland, they could create an artifice that does what you would expect quicksand to do.
Well, they can do incredible things at Horrorland, as we learned very quickly as the parents, mom and dad, drive Brittany and Molly Malloy. Brittany has won free tickets to Horrorland out of nowhere, seemingly out of nowhere. And mom and dad are taking her and her best friend Molly for a week's stay at the big, beautiful theme park. They show up and they can do incredible things, to speak of the quicksand. For instance, there are buzzards flying around in the sky, and mom shields her eyes and looks up and she's like, are those buzzards? And dad, I think this was a great line. Dad laughed. They're probably animated robots or something. Very clever. And he just writes it off. And I want to say that, like, seeing a buzzard would be kind of like, even if it was at a place, would be kind of weird, but I'd be like, okay, I can explain that. But a flying robot is...
In 2008
is pretty incredible, Dad. A little more than very clever. So
if there's a flying robot in 2008, it's probably going to drop a Hellfire missile on you.
Speaking of the CIA. So then what? The whores light their luggage on fire. And then the parents are like, that must be some sort of complicated joke.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they do get their screams on file, which is kind of good.
That's funny.
I kind of perked up. I was like, is this going to be all right?
It's okay. I'm telling you, this is kind of good.
We get a sour taxi ride where they think they're going to crash, but they're not going to crash. It was all part of the ride, guys. Don't trust anything. Brittany says, I'm not going to believe anything from here on out.
Yep.
It's all part of an incredibly complicated bit.
Mm-hmm. It's Westworld.
We have a weird interaction where they're killing time before they check in at the hotel, and
they get some frozen eyeballs.
They get some frozen eyeballs, kind of cute. They're just, you know, it's just ice cream.
And then there's a blood. Bloodshot. That's it.
Yeah. And
see, this is already so much more fun.
It's because here's the thing: he's like having a good time. Everything's amped up. The horrors are kind of fun and kind of funny.
Yeah.
They're like people who work at a theme park, and the things that they wish they could say, they're like the people that work at those mean restaurants, which I don't understand why you would ever go to. They're kind of like the mean restaurant people, where they can be mean to you because that's part of the fun.
Yeah, the hot dog place in Chicago where they yell at you. No,
yeah,
I think
no thanks.
People go to the mean restaurants because niceness hurts sometimes, because like people have to be nice in that scenario.
Mm-hmm.
If you had, they have to be mean in that scenario, so you can always shrug off whatever meanness, because they have to be for their job. They work at a mean place,
right?
And like if you invert that, it's like, oh, at every place they're nice, that's not really kindness. That's just niceness.
Yeah.
So I get conceptually why the mean restaurant exists, even though it's not something I would like to participate in.
Totally.
Just as I get that BDSM exists, and it's not really something I want to participate in.
And that's what this is like, this is the, for people who want to be scared so fully because they want to believe that maybe death is right around the corner.
Yeah. and we get a weird interaction with Madame Doom, a fortune teller, mm-hmm. an animatronic fortune telling thing. I thought Brittany would have her fill of animatronics and dolls and stuff,
yeah,
but she's like, "I love these things." And
it's not mentioned. They never meant that
it
throughout the.
It would be good to pay that off. Yeah, like, oh boy, another one of these.
Yeah, there are 8 chapters in this portion of the book. We'll get to the ending and finally they pay off the stuff. But through 7 of these chapters, not a word of Slappy and not a word of Ethan or anything that happened. They don't talk about the incident, the recent incident, or anything. And she, for instance, Kevin, she goes to the fortune teller's booth of Madame Doom, mm-hmm. and Madame Doom sends her out a blank fortune card and says, "You don't have a future, Brittany." You would think
that would
moment,
evoke something
yes.
for you.
Yeah.
Given what you'd just gone through.
I just had to go through it. So so can you at least talk about it? Because we just had to go through that together, Brittany.
Yeah, if I knew that magic dolls exist, I would not go to a horror-themed
that
amusement
too.
Park.
Yeah, she really rolls. I didn't think about it because this is our 6th Slappy book, but she really rolls with that revelation that Slappy's real both times, when it's real and fake one, and just pretty quick.
She leans into it.
Huh. I wonder if God's real.
Well, I've just been given a glimpse that there is some sort of quantifiable human soul, and I guess I'll go to a theme park now. We learn about we do some more dumb shit. We briefly learn about La Resistance. mm-hmm. That there's a group of horrors who are plotting perhaps to overthrow Horrorland.
I love it.
Horrorland's not as it seems. Kind of cool.
There is a missive to find the other park, a mysterious little a little nugget for us that kind of wants us to like there's another park somewhere. This stuff is all cool. Like
there's always a park. There's always a horror.
There's always another park.
It's always a lighthouse.
God damn it! gets me every time.
But they're like, well, we already know not to believe anything.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, the hotel is called Stagger Inn, which is pretty good.
Is it?
Not bad. It's not bad.
I think it's all right for a spooky hotel, as opposed to like Bone Hotel. I don't know, at least stagger in. It's got kind of a...
It's better than the typical puns we're fed throughout this. I'll say that much. I'm with you, Chad. I like that too.
I'm starting to see an entire fake world here.
He's world building.
This makes it more interesting.
He is world building, and he's not doing a bad job at it.
I'll be honest, the hint that there is a horror resistance movement, whether or not that's real, or yet another red herring stretched across 18 books.
Fair.
I dared let my heart flutter with hope for a second that there might be a nuance to this world.
Yeah, this little 8-chapter addendum at the end of this book, postscript,
is so weird. Such a weird format.
It's so strange.
This is what the people, kids who bought this book, were probably expecting more, I think, than, I don't know, they wanted to
stop. Well, here's the thing, let's try to read his intentions here. And the only thing I can read the intention of doing the first portion of this book is to give you some empathy with Brittany, and maybe with the rest of the family. The problem is, to Kevin's nihilistic point, there is, this book is entirely nihilistic, and you don't learn anything, and I don't think that Brittany learns anything, and even if she did, none of it is used in this new portion of the book. So why did we have it? Why didn't we just start with them and just build the character within the park, you know?
If this had been somehow like, by surviving Slappy, you have earned the right to go to Horrorland. If this was like...
Oh, Chad, the resistance reaches out. You know what I mean?
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
You know?
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. You deal with horrors and monsters. We know because of our secret channels, and like, and we're sending you an invite because we need strong-willed children or whatever.
Yeah.
But no, there's none of that.
But if they summoned like a super group of all of the children that Slappy has menaced, led by like Jimmy O. James as like the Nick Fury, like that would be kind of funny. But
yeah,
maybe that'll happen. Anything could happen.
Let's be realistic. It's probably not.
La Resistance could go nowhere.
Well, to speak to this Horrorland's resources, not only do they have, you know, buzzards and all of these things going on and the ability to make quicksand, they do a thing where they burn all of your clothes.
Yep.
And then when you get to the hotel, you get all new clothes.
Designer clothes.
I wonder why.
I also wonder why, because I don't know what he was doing with that, but they seem like really normal clothes is the other weird thing. Like, she puts on just, like, a cute sundress, and it's like, okay. Like, wouldn't they give you, like, monster, wouldn't they give you, like, your, like, Kingdom Hearts, like, Horrorland outfit or whatever?
The clothes that are, like, a personification of your soul?
It's
objectification of your soul?
It would be way creepier if there was just one, like, set of clothes sized perfectly for each of them. And they're like, wear this.
No, but instead you get a bunch of clothes that say Supreme on them.
Makeover, 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 makeover.
Makeover, makeover. Makeover, makeover, makeover.
And then mom and dad are gone, and cell phones don't exist.
and that's the book.
Yep. And Slappy, they find the digital camera and Slappy's on the camera. That's it.
Oh, that's right. They did find that. So that's the thing. And here's my thinking for why Slappy and the events of the previous chapters in this book are not mentioned. I think that RL knew that you'd figure out that Slappy was involved in this if you were thinking about him again throughout this.
Yeah.
I mean,
in an intro, if he pays these off, these mysteries off, hats off to him. I have no idea how Slappy is involved right now. I don't know why Mr. Crosby has a picture of Slappy. Like, all of these things.
I think Slappy took a selfie before.
That's what I think. Slappy invented the selfie and in this moment and kidnapped her parents as well.
It's weird how, you know, we've come a long way as far as in, like, RL's writing career. He's got even more to work with now. And somehow he's still not allowed to fuck with time at all. Like, what if we put the Horrorland part first and it's like, oh shit, like, you know, here we are in Horrorland. Like, it starts with the Horrorland chapters. Like, my only suggestion is we move the Horrorland to the first part and then the rest of the other 2/3 of the book is a flashback. And it's like, oh shit, Slappy stole Brittany's parents. Why would Slappy steal Brittany's parents? here's why.
The funny thing is, he did do that by using the graveyard chapter up front and then flipping back in time. He can do this. Yeah. He understands the concept, but he just doesn't do it. It's downright maddening.
It's just, it's like he thinks we don't have the RAM to, like, have a question in our heads, you know?
To like, hold a question throughout a book.
Yeah, like, he doesn't think that it is possible for a human to have an unanswered question in their head and to read a book.
Yes.
I wonder what he knows that I don't. Because I think that's possible. But my life isn't, I'm not a successful author.
But you're not beautifully rich as he is.
No. So what could I possibly know, Paul?
Stop asking questions. I have one last thing that made me really angry in this book.
Yeah.
I'd love to hear it.
Before we ever learn of Ethan, like before we ever meet Ethan, we're told that he loves to kick. Why was he not allowed to kick Slappy at one point and fuck him up with his powerful kicks?
Oh yeah, with his strong tap dancing shoes, he could have just curb stomped him.
If he could have saved the day. He did nothing. He had no purpose in the book other than to be like a front end misdirect. Let him save the day with one really sick kick that sends Slappy flying away from Brittany so she can grab the mind stealer and throw it at him.
What if Slappy got to torture Ethan and break him? Like, what? Like, that is what put Ethan on the straight and narrow. Just
what if Slappy were to take Ethan to a CIA black site?
Like, if we want to punish Ethan for his crimes, let's just introduce him to a bigger bully. Let's introduce him to a worse version of himself,
right?
Which mm-hmm. would be Slappy. I guess there wasn't enough time to do that or something. I just don't know why you make a character as reprehensible as Ethan and say nothing about him. But other than everything's just a joke and nothing matters.
Is there any chance he comes back in this? I'm fascinated how this is going to be a recurring series.
That's very true, Chad. We do have to, sadly have to hold the question in our minds that has been asked by this book, and hopefully the question will be answered one day.
Because the next book is not a Slappy book. It'd be fascinating if somehow these were all Slappies, but actually maybe we're glad it's not. It is Creep from the Deep and shows a eel monster thing. And I am now braced myself for a bunch of unrelated stories and then a couple chapters at the end of, and then those kids go to Horrorland.
That's what will happen. I am fairly positive.
When do they all, like, when do the Avengers assemble?
Let's look at the book list, right?
Is there one called just, like, all the kids beat up Slappy?
God, we can hope. No, I don't see. Well, there is Escape from Horrorland coming up, so...
Hmm.
Which is book 11.
Oh.
Which is book 11. So
is that the only one that references Horrorland in the title?
So there's that. There is one that looks like it's not really a book. It's called Welcome to Horrorland, a Survival Guide.
Well, that's a precursor book.
I think that was just ad copy for Horrorland. Yeah.
There is the one before it. The title is just Help! We have strange powers.
I feel you.
This, I don't know. I see maybe two that could be. No, just the one. It's in the middle. I have a feeling he's going to give up on this.
You don't think we're going to see the fruits of La Resistance?
I don't think he's going to see this through. We'll see.
We'll see. We did hear from the fine folks on our Discord that the series does get good, but it does not start strong.
Okay. Okay.
It didn't start strong.
I didn't see those messages. I could have used the morale boost of those messages. I'm sorry I didn't see them before I read this, but thank you for that information.
I remember seeing on Discord folks were talking about Horrorland and how the first couple are maybe a little rough.
Okay.
But eventually maybe something good and interesting and different comes out of that.
That would be wonderful.
Yeah.
Okay.
Cool. You know, it's the hope that kills you though.
I'm going to hold on to hope. I think that's been a Goosebuds. If you want to support this show and get access to bonus Camp Goosebud episodes we do every month, our Discord and other cool stuff, you can go to patreon.com/goosebuds. Your pledge supports the show, keeps the lights on, and it's the reason why we are reading this next series, but we're also going to keep going back and forth between what Fear Street,
yeah,
some adventure books. Yeah. We maybe found an adventure book or two about a certain blue blur that I'm very excited to get into.
He's ready.
but if you want to read us to read a certain one first, your best way to do that is go to patreon.com/goofbuzz.
Yeah, I think it's important to note that we found out about that Sonic adventure book through our patrons talking about that in Discord. So
I would say over the last like couple of years, the patrons have definitely influenced the direction of the show at multiple times with recommendations. There have been quite a number of books that we have been brought to our attention through that. So you join the Patreon community and you gain power. So if you want a little power in life, join it, please.
And we might say your name in a funny way.
Yeah.
I'd say what else is going on? You guys like anything you want to share? You want to promote things you're excited about, things you're watching and liking right now?
I just want to promote Goosebuds. I think it's a good show and I think you should join us. Keep on listening. And maybe watch Continue Show.
Yeah, sure, do that too. Chad, would you like to recommend anything?
Well, after that, I mean, I don't know. Reservation Dogs is really good.
Oh, I heard I like Reservation Dogs. I hear it's nice. Great. I gotta check that out.
Prepare yourself for some emotional damage, y'all, as you watch it, but highly recommend Reservation Dogs.
Okay, cool.
Nice.
That's it. Shall we wrap this up and we'll see y'all next time?
Yeah, sounds good.
All right, guys. We'll see you then. Goodbye.
Bye, everybody. Bye. Love you.
Love you. Bye.
I love you. Goodbye. This episode of Goosebuds is brought to you by our wonderful Patreon supporters, including those venerable folks in the Book of Names.
The Book of Names.
Book of Names.
Starting with Stefan Jive Turkey Kuwabara.
Hollis Hornbeak.
Lowbelly Hate Me.
Nathan Dolezal.
Mike Lanteri.
Mickey C.
Michael McDowell.
Hey Josh Robb.
Cameron Murphy Audio.
Buddy Morrill.
Mel Dibson.
LK.
Afshin.
Dango Twist.
Zenticles pours the cold water on the ice church floor.
Yes.
Oh shit, coldinate
it. Yes, seal it up. Stealth Bates.
Robert Moon.
Jason Crooker.
Miguel Pardo.
John Keaty.
Clay Castle.
Calf.
The Juggalobalist.
Slink demands redacted content.
Slink, no more paranoia shop. It's not coming, but thank you. Gregory D. Warren.
Cody Redfield.
Alan Saylor.
Bradford Coulter.
Aiden pledges their hammer to Dwarf Daddy Kevin. Thank you, Dwarven Child.
Jar Jar Slinks.
Chosen One pledges his cadre of musketeers to House Kevin.
Thank you, Musketeer Children. Levi Tham.
Up and Champ.
Jonas Engman.
The John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation.
Carl.
Anthony Mulberry.
Yanni Markovina.
Elusive Koala.
Drew Applegate.
Christian Vanskever.
Brooke X.
Jesus Christ.
Jeremy Lowe.
Brian Hobgood.
Zach Connor.
Patreon _ donator, yo.
Joe Spooky Digital Ghost Tierney.
Tom Whittem.
Lord Cornwallis.
Andrew Jadzik ventures a guess that Jeff Webb is not a baby anymore, but actually a toddler at this point.
Oh my god, they grow up so fast.
Time moves faster in the podcast realm.
I also think it's been 2 years.
It's also been 2 years. You a toddler now, boy. Murphy P.
Jesus Christ, what does that mean? The Carson Birkenbean.
He's just a toddler now.
Tevin Ticklebean disguises self as a dwarf named Kevin Picklebean and pledges to Kevin for 1 month.
Thank you for your support, Kevin Picklebean.
What happened to Tevin Ticklebean? He's got to be like a teenager by now.
Yeah, I got old. Sean Minogue.
Rushy Glenn.
Alicia Grafe.
Wiggle it!
Luke LaFontaine.
Matt McClellan.
Chip Handsome.
Tanya Turtle.
Juan Jalapena.
Jonas Blatterman.
Timothy Misa Dulakis.
Keith Halcrow.
Clay McCarty.
Parker Lee.
Ham_boat.
The Crowfens, but seasonal.
Raymond Hernandez.
Matthew Sutton.
Paul Grasso.
Jeffrey Owen Cahy.
Kelsey Kinneman.
Joe, regular name, Scott.
Wow, you really flipped that one, Chad.
That was incredibly regular.
It's a writer term we call flip the script.
Whoa. Alex Moon, the robotic dog.
Russell Castberg.
Xavier Jimenez.
Scottie Pippen.
Chris Poutrakis.
Dungeon Kappa.
Tobias Clark.
Zach Ware.
Limp Duck.
Ice Acolyte Hamster.
A lot of pro ice people today. Luke Noodles.
Zam Bambino.
Melt that wall. Meet Virginia.
Hugh Bolin.
Nathan Remick.
Estimina, Lord of False Pants.
Need more kimchi.
Chris Hard Penis is dead. Long live Hard Penis, Nelson.
A hard penis for a season is still a hard penis. We'll miss it, but I'm glad I got to die with dignity. Streak.
Reed Stubendink.
Lee Wood.
Tacky Tammy.
Kieran McNamara.
Joey Evans.
Diet Soda.
Lamb, the aspiring demon lord of friendship.
Ooh. Cool. Jackie Ledoux.
Coleman Laguza.
Carewise Gamgee.
Cameron Hansen.
A wild swaggy YOLO squire appears.
A pair of Scots.
Levi Kidder.
David Gray.
The Deadly Bulb.
Matthew Brittato.
Generally depressing.
Bryce Diori.
I am Cornholio. I need TP for my bunghole.
Carbson, the son of Carb.
Ben Bohan, the Bow of Han.
Yeah.
Oh, man. R.L. Slink is founding Lava Church. All hail the great magma beast. Redact that name.
That sounds cool.
I think Lava Church and Ice Church could meet in the middle somewhere.
What?
Bony.
Jonas Enevoldsen.
Some of Chad's bird friends. We pledge our talons and sharpen beaks to Chad. Thank you.
Scree. Joe Gorman.
Burger's blissful anti-spiral manifesting.
Since the demon says trans rights, Anthony must know if the church is officially melting it or not. Answer carefully. I am confused by this question prompt.
Me too, actually.
The church is trans rights, and the church is not melting currently, but it could if we wanted to, but some of us don't want it.
Oh, we almost got him in it. Oh, we almost had him looped in into a loophole.
Some of us have secret doubts that the other members of the church clergy don't know about.
Ah, so close.
Nicholas Maloney.
Tiffany Lee.
Germ Juice.
Eric Horwitz.
Calamity Carl.
Thomas Jansis.
Nick Johnson.
Mutant Astronaut.
Lucretia McEvil.
Henry Torbert.
Boner Guard Epsilon Hamilton, aka Hambone, host of Radio Bone Air.
Ooh. I love it. I love it. Adam Knapp.
Ryan Carroll.
Jeremy Bowser.
Logan Derby.
Chick.
Brad Schmelzer.
Megan McCormick Mason.
Ninja Bread Ben.
Callum Mr. Misfire West.
Skeletorin.
Mandy Nasty.
Helodicus Frenchlin. I love that name every time.
Aaron Lord.
Yoplin.
Dr. Chocula pledges every claw and fang under his command to Paul.
Thank you, Chocolate Child.
Love it. Philip Reynolds.
Robot Arena.
Nate Bitgy.
Mr. Unimportant wants to know if you can pee on the Ice Church floor.
Only if your pee is cold.
Huh.
What?
Oh, okay. What? I'm on board that. Yeah. Only
wait,
if your
no.
pee is cold.
Wait, no, 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 no.
Yes. Yep, oh, nope. I forgot. I said it's in the diocese.
I forgot where I stood. Shit.
You blew it, Paul.
I don't stand on pee, so I don't want pee on our floor.
Can I actually say, as someone who likes to build up the ice, I don't know about peeing on the Ice Church floor. That seems kind of gross.
Can I say that nothing's more refreshing than a Jamba Juice and an ice cold pee?
Together? Or?
Yeah.
Yeah, you go back and forth. It's like having a smoothie and a coffee.
I want to clarify, Kevin. Do you mean because you have a Jamba Juice, your pee is ice cold and therefore you have a nice cold sensation when you urinate? Or that you drink cold pee?
So who's up next for names?
Scott Wable.
Ryan R. Davis.
Rocco.
Josh Howell no longer pledges his zealotry as it has been mocked. No zealotry for anyone.
Come on,
Josh. It's a zealous response in itself.
Get over it, Josh.
End the siege. Give us the zealotry back. We're begging
you. We need it. We're so sorry. We said no. We made fun of your zealotness.
Please, Josh. SSJ Trogdor.
Ebdog.
Llama Lad.
Mike Spaghetti Jones.
Greg Musto.
Sprinkle Buns.
Hi, first time. Long time.
Allie Rose.
Chris.
Hilda B.
The discography of Blues Traveler and inhalation of skunkweed enhances Pauly Shore's piloting of the Gundam Sandrock.
I'm gonna have to look that one up.
I know all of the things referenced in this, but I don't understand why they're together. Suck it in, you Rin Tin Tin. Soggy Newspapers.
Liam Rogers.
John W. I
still think about that name. Dakota Kemp.
Chris Kulik.
Ali underscore Suts.
Mike Hart.
Keith the Great.
Saturn Video.
Wade Norcross.
Kiwi of Lerv.
Gulliverb.
Serial Killer X.
Cassandra Harris.
That last name was my favorite.
It's a cool name.
Kira and Brian are big fans.
Big Nick Lane.
Kit Bush.
Blake Cavan. No longer having a bad time.
Yeah, oh, our national nightmare's over.
Seriously.
Dan Antonio.
Jover the Moon.
Dennis Wright.
Cameron Ganzeval.
Several upset horses.
Oh, no.
I hope they don't stamp the ice.
Crash Callahan and the Voodoo Death Gun.
Whoa. Farrah Aaron.
CM Crystal Maiden.
Matt Septor.
I hope, but let's get more single or double letter names so we can start coming up with what they are. Greg Gervasi, Vita Zen.
Hopefully they're all Dota abbreviation. Jesse.
Paul's Wang does its thing to Sonic's last golden ring tonight at 11. Dun-dun.
Whoa, those are big rings. Those are big rings, Paul.
I'm not saying anything. Cole Gleason.
Chris Curdo.
B.
Anthony Rodriguez.
S. Slardar. That's another Dota character.
Oh, you're pulling out Dota character? I thought you made up that cool name.
No, when you're in chat, when like in-game chat, you're like CM's mid. You'd like tell people that.
Oh.
Crystal Maiden's mid.
Michael Malloy.
Jesse Boggs.
Jeff Webb is still a big baby, but we both sincerely appreciate your well wishes. Grow up, Jeff Webb.
Whoa.
In a good way.
Whoa.
Get big and strong, Jeff Webb.
Alpaca acquaintance turns their cup anti-clockwise, yes. Good.
So it's still going down.
Turaku, the thing that goes doink in the anime.
Doink, doink, doink.
Kyle O'Neill.
Spencer Y.
Goomkoots.
Bjarndeer.
Wunderskin.
Brought to you by 3M Corporation. Chris Soul Skater Byers.
Brony Danza.
Hold me closer,
Brony Danza.
Anthony Stoker.
Greb Comics.
What? Wait.
He's back.
Wait, Wunderskins? Wunderskins back again!
Two Wunderskins.
It is a second skin.
You put the other Wunderskin on top of your other Wunderskin, you're even more safe.
That's Wunderskin to the max, aka Max.
Dog Lips underscore Kajoyan.
Raylan the Youthful Candy Maker.
AKA Cyberbrice.
Nice. Talene Jones.
Girthworm Jim.
Blarbin pours orthogonally. Yes!
This one's for Kevin. Babette's Feast 3, Revenge of the Gobble Ghoul.
I mean, they really had to mix it up after where the plot of Babette's Feast 2 left everything, so the Gobble Ghoul was narratively
necessary.
Well,
she did rise the Gobble Ghoul in 2, so yeah. she had to face down with the Gobble Ghoul.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the payoff for the Gobble Ghoul really needed 2 movies in order to fully tell the story.
Starship 9!
Logan Kilgus. Oh, that's not me.
It's fine. Boss Feratu, and then Paul goes.
Smelodies.
Proper Spaceman.
Angelo. Edward. Longton. Dash. Santone.
Bacon the Awkwardly Unseen.
Caleb Snyder. Grandmaster of Spells and Enchantments. Pledges his wizard staff and ancient tome to Paul.
But I need your skills. I don't know how to use your wizard staff and ancient tome, Caleb Snyder.
3 a.m. sleep.
Brought to you by 3 a.m.
3 a.m. Corporation?
Yeah, 3 a.m. Corporation.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Beautiful shot. Canadian Ghoul.
R.I.P. Paul Ritchie stuffed into the cat vent by a My Buddy doll after running out of continues.
Wow, so many references.
Lumo Nuva.
J.W.
Jesus Wept.
Yep, there's no Dota character. Brian Udath.
L.O.D.
A tall glass of dumb bitch juice.
Ooh. Sterner Stock.
Psychosis.
Nowhere Lucas.
Kyle Welch.
Clint Dierking.
Brian Stereau.
Agents Miskatonic. Cool. Ooh.
C.L. Reagan.
Brian Sika.
Justin.
And welcome to the new names in our book of names. Shina S.
Climb right on out of the cat vent, Jessica Nicole. You're in the book of names now.
You best start believing in stories, Jaybird, you're in the book now. Jaybird, I already said your name.
And welcome, Ben Foyos Sayer.
How did you...
Floyos.
How did you know how to say that?
Floyos.
Please message us.
I missed the L in the...
You
the
said it with read. Such conviction, I believed that's how that word
yeah,
is said.
Yeah. It's
Well, it's immortalized in the book of names now.
All right. Well, I'll do better next time.
Thank you all so very, very much for your love.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
This season, a new hot deal has arrived at Metro. $25 a line for 4 lines with all the data you need and 4 free Samsung Galaxy A15 5G phones. Getting Metro's best deals is easy. No ID required, no activation fees. Get a new number or keep your own. It's up to you. That's 4 lines for $25 a line plus 4 free phones. Visit a store or go online today. Only at Metro by T-Mobile.
When you join Metro Plus Tax, for a limited time and subject to change. Max 1 offer per account.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.